Okay, we're back. So I'm going to ask you one last question, which is, what is your hope? What's your hope for the world? Yeah. From of course where you're positioned within it.
As a designer.
As a person.
As me.
As yeah, as all the things that are you. If you.
Well, I kind of feel like when you're a designer, professional designer, it's a bit like, you know how people do an arts degree because they don't. I mean, not all people, but some people do an arts degree because they want to have a way of, you know, understanding the world, like they do philosophy and all that stuff. And it's not that they want to get a job in philosophy, they just want to expand their, you know, toolkit for understanding the world.
Yeah, education rather than training.
Yeah, exactly. Life training. Anyway, it's a roundabout way. This is a roundabout way of saying that. It's interesting that when you study design, you get that same kind of perspective. It's a way of looking at the world differently, but it has this extra dimension where you make actual tangible changes in it. And I think when you look at it like that and you do it for a while, you realize that all of your philosophies on, you know, like what you think about, I don't know, like climate change or, I don't know, like people, gay people getting married or all that kind of stuff, really isn't like not a delineating thing where you're like, these are my personal views about the world and then I'm also a designer and they don't relate to each other at all.
Yeah.
So I don't know, I kind of feel like yeah, as a designer looking at that question, I would say you might have to edit out a bit of silence now while I think about it.
You can think about it. You made me think about the dude, I forget his name, who is Japanese guy, but he entered an American hot dog eating competition.
Oh, yeah, the guy who, yeah, I know
about him. Obliterated everyone.
Yeah. Because do you know how he trained for that? He drank lots of water to extend his, like, you know, like, what do you call it? Distend his stomach.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, he would, like, drink, like, liters of water. Anyway, sorry. Well,
just that everybody else was working on the assumption that the way that you do it is you just do it the same way, which is eat a hot dog. Mm-hmm. But more rapidly. And he changed the design of his action, which was to swallow the sausages pretty much whole and dip the bread buns in the water to soften them so he wouldn't have to chew them.
Oh, so he had like 30 hot dogs and he ate all of the dogs first.
Yeah, so he redesigned his actions within it.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to know how to get to that point, not just the super now version of it, not just the sped up, more frantic, what we've already been doing. Because in the same way that I don't think electric cars are the answer to our combustion cars pollution, because all we're doing is slightly shifting how the current thing is done. We're not.
Yeah, it's a bit like when people talk about our meat is a drain on the planet. Why don't we grow meat in labs? And you think, well, you know, why don't you eat mushrooms and carrots and stuff?
Yeah, yeah.
Hmm.
So how do you get to the point where you're finally not looking at tweaking how the thing now is done, but questioning what is the need and how to otherwise fulfill it or address it or have the conversation and dialogue around the actual thing, not just what it looks like.
I don't think that there's necessarily something that everybody needs to do in society. If you have some people who are thinking like that and they can propose things for people and that's their job, then that's good, you know.
Is that your job?
Yeah, I think that's designers' jobs. Yeah. And not just designers, people who call themselves designers, but, you know, policymakers or activists or all those people.
Well, I wonder this about
dancers as well.
Well, yeah, if you're talking about policy, then I start thinking about finances, and I think that money is a technology, and it's a technology that was designed.
Or a system. You could think of it as a system as well. Yeah.
But do you design systems?
Yeah, well, everybody does. Like, getting up and making this cup of tea was designing a system.
Yeah, but
I think, like, it's kind of funny because as a designer, when you say, oh, everything's design, that can be completely useless, but it also can be completely profound at the same time.
And so then when I say everything's dance, which is not something I actually agree with anymore, but I do believe that there's movement in most things.
Mm-hmm.
That I also believe that there are some people who never learn to walk in a way that's nice and comfortable for their bodies.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just don't know, you don't know.
Yeah. And
or if you don't care, maybe you don't care.
Yeah, I don't think everybody has to care about this stuff. It's like not everybody has to be a climate scientist, you know, or not everybody has to understand negative gearing.
But hopefully, if, yeah, but
then I'm happy to outsource that part.
Yeah.
But, okay, how would I answer your question? I hope for the world.
Well, and I also wonder, because I imagine that these are both very similar questions, but from opposite sides. So your hope for the world is trying to take us beyond small iterations, but also it's asking the question of not how can I do this thing a little bit more efficiently or effectively, but what is this thing serving?
Yeah, well, actually, you know, I know how I'd answer. You just gave me the answer to how I'd answer your question. I think that if there was one thing that I would hope that could happen, it would be that people would take that kind of thing that you're talking about, where you don't make iterative small tweaks to something, but make a big overhaul from the beginning with something that actually makes sense and apply that to economics. Because it seems to me like the biggest design challenge in the whole world is redesigning how the economy works. So I hope that can happen. You know, like less of a consumer culture, more equal society, more, you know, even distribution of resources. It seems to me like that's the biggest design challenge. And then that solves a whole bunch of problems if you can do that better. You know, you have better health outcomes, better education, all that kind of stuff.
And the incentive for cutting corners on consideration and long-term consideration outcomes.
So, yeah, I guess if I had one, if you rephrase that question slightly and said, what's one design challenge that you hope could be addressed, it would be that.
You know anyone who's up to the challenge?
I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of funny because it's not really a challenge that you can solve on your own, which is what the problem is, that there's lots of people who want it to be better and lots of people who have different ideas about what better is. But, it's one of the most challenging design problems too, because there's no direct way to attack the problem. I think it's a very challenging one. And when you look at people who study economics and economic policy and stuff like that, often they don't have the same training that people who study design have. But people who study design don't have the knowledge or maybe the confidence or the connections or often the interest to approach that problem themselves. So, yeah, I think it's quite hard. But if you could take some of the knowledge and skills of people who are professional designers and work with people who are professional, you know, economists or like economic thinkers or whatever, maybe that could be productive. And also designers need to accept how responsible they are for, or implicit they are in that whole schmozzle. You know, like how I think a lot of designers see themselves as mercenaries, where you, I don't know, like you outsource your responsibility for a whole bunch of those negative outcomes from your actions or your, you know, involvement in all these big processes. Like, I don't know, like if you look at design awards, often they're really focused on surface level stuff and they don't really look at things like the kind of waste that you're creating or the, you know, kind of consumer culture that you're developing or all that kind of stuff. I think it's getting a lot better now though.
Yeah. Well, there was, I forget the guy's name, but I'll look it up. But he was the first African-American man who worked in an advertising agency in the States. And his catchphrase became that black people were not dark-skinned white people. And you needed to consider that the culture was different as well. And he even spoke about how for a very short time he redesigned a cigarettes commercial to be appealing to African-American people. But he at some stage realized that he was then responsible for appealing.
Yeah, the responsible thing would be to keep making them not appeal to them.
Yeah, because there was like a natural aversion because the white American ad campaign was a white cowboy on a horse in the middle of
the country Marvel
America.
Man.
Yeah, exactly. And he was
really deeply resonate with a lot of people like in the city. Yeah.
People. Exactly. But it was interesting that to take on responsibility, even at the smallest level of what color you make the buy button, where you put it on the page. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, you know, an interesting bit of trivia. Do you know why the bottom of a cigarette is always that kind of orange speckly color?
No.
It's because they used to be made out of pieces of cork.
Oh.
Mm.
And so you just suck the smoke through cork.
Yeah, and then when they stopped doing that, they kept it. It was this hangover. It's another good example of a hangover like that is the QWERTY keyboard.
Yes. You
know? Like, it started out because it was good for typewriters. The keys wouldn't jam or whatever. Then they were like, well, everyone's used to this. We'll keep it on computer keyboards.
Because the typists were getting too quick and it would jam.
Yeah, exactly.
The old
The little
typewriters.
Yeah, the
arms.
Little arms.
And so they designed one that was less efficient to slow everyone down.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And that's even translated one. It's jumped even further away from the original thing because now you use it on tablets and smartphones and stuff where it makes no sense because half the time you're just using two thumbs.
Yeah.
But it goes, that's a good example of that thing you were talking about where if you could redesign it from scratch, you would, you know, if you look at it now and be like, how should we do that? Yeah. It would definitely not be.
And some people have, like there's.
Yeah, there's that other kind.
Circle keyboard. So it always comes back to the thumb and there's concentric expanding circles of the most commonly used letters in your set language. And so you can zoom in and out from those.
Yeah, lots of things like that. But like, once they get stuck, though, you can't get past them. Like, good luck trying to, you know, design a new interface for a car where you're like, oh, I think it'd be better if the brake was on the right.
We're not going to get there until we get to autonomous cars where there's just a wireless connection to your phone and you say the address and there's a big red button in the dash if you want to pull over.
Yeah, it's going to make such a big difference. Like, you don't have to be freaked out about your teenage kids going to parties and getting drunk and coming home and driving and crashing their car anymore.
Yeah.
Also, you know, the thing that's going to be super exciting is that they won't have traffic lights anymore and all these cars are just going to, like, weave between each other, you know, like... Whoosh,
whoosh, whoosh. Like on B-movie.
Like
because all the bees are connected.
Oh, right, yeah.
The movie.
I haven't seen it, but I imagine you're right. Where they would just go through each other.
Yeah, or like Vietnam.
Oh, right, yeah. That's kind of interesting, isn't it? It's like, it's very organic in, I was thinking of China as well, but yeah, flows like a school of fish or something.
Yeah. Yeah. What other hangovers are there?
Oh, there's heaps. Like, clothing, there's heaps of examples of clothing. Like, why do you wear a necktie?
I just figured it was close to a noose, but serves as a bib for your white shirt.
Oh, I was just, I heard that security guards, this guy who's a security guard was saying, oh yeah, when I signed on to work as a security guard, I just thought, I'm not going to wear a clip-on tie that the company gives me. That's really tacky. I'm going to get a proper tie because, you know, I'm a stylish guy. And then a couple of weeks later, got in a bit of a fight with somebody and somebody just yanked the tie and he realized immediately why they had clip-on ties and switched over.
Okay. So there's the hangover of keeping up the appearance of having a tie, but the small iteration of not having it be a deathly...
Yeah, and also, if you want to look for another kind of...
Hangovers are what we want, Chris.
Well, yeah. What's another hangover?
No, what were you going to say? I shouldn't have cut you off.
What was I going to... Oh, right, yeah. Also, it's finding a new use for something, because clip-on ties were originally for laziness and they became for self-preservation. But examples of hangovers, there's so many. I mean, basically, you know, 99% of everything is something that's just the way it was because it was the way it was. But yeah, in clothing, for example, like, why even is there gendered clothing anymore? What purpose does that serve? What purpose did that ever serve? I mean, sometimes there's, you know, like bras, I can see why you would have them. But, you know.
So you're talking about basically Star Trek. Where everyone's just got the same skin tight onesie.
Yeah, that's the future.
And it regulates your heat so that your nipples don't...
Don't become erect.
Tell everybody that you're really cold, actually.
Well, you know, that could be useful feedback. Another example of... What's a good example of a hangover? Oh, another one. It's not a terrible one, but it's an interesting one, is that the numbers on phones used to go from 1 to 9, I think with 0 first or 0 last. I can't remember. But the reason why you end up with 9-1-1, a lot of people say, I don't actually know the real reason, but a lot of people say, oh, it's because they're at opposite sides of a keypad, so you won't accidentally bump them, which makes sense. But then a lot of people also say, oh, it's because the 9, the 1 and the 1 were like up the top of a rotary dial.
Yes, yes, so it's quicker to dial. I think paper.
But then you would just do 1-1-1.
Hangover.
Yeah. Also that idea that you need to, especially when you're claiming your expenses for something and they'll only accept the original receipt as if somehow that's, you know, some
kind
of
gospel
truth.
But you can take a picture.
Lots of times they won't. Another thing that, like, for example, when you're doing a really, filling out a really binding form, if you don't have the original signature, that doesn't count because apparently in law, the signature is evidence that on a particular piece of paper you made a particular mark and you're holding the paper that had the mark on it. And so I think a lot of people have digital signatures, which they just put onto stuff and print it out or like send it as a JPEG or something. But technically, I don't think in a lot of cases that cuts the mustard.
In Japan, you have a seal that you carry around. It looks like a miniature. It looks like a chapstick.
A name chop.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're cool.
A name chop.
Yeah.
And I asked the friend that introduced me to it, like, what happens if you just lose it? Can't somebody else just name chop you?
Ooh. Yeah, there should be some kind of, like, destruction button. Some, you know, like, you can dial a phone number and your name
chop. But also, it's just your last name. And so if you marry and you take on a new last name, you need a new one.
Well, I don't know if it's like that in Japan, but in China, when you get married, you don't change your surname.
No one changes their surname.
No, women keep their family name when they get married.
Okay.
I don't know about Japan, though.
But also, there are a lot of people with the same last name. And so if your name stamp is just your last name, then it means less and less.
Yeah, well, I only know about China, but the name chop that I have in Chinese is my first and last name in Chinese. But I had a pretty common... I mean, pretty much everybody in China has a common Chinese surname. And my Chinese surname is a common one. And I went to the post office to pay my bill. And my Chinese name is Gao Feng. I went to the guy and said, oh, I just want to pay the phone bill for Gao Feng, who lives in this cherry blossom lane. And the guy was like, you already paid that. And I said, yeah. some other Gao Feng accidentally paid my bill. But apparently that happens all the time. Like, people get arrested and then they're like, realize a few days later that you're not the Wang Peng that they were looking for.
Oh, shit.
Yeah.
So are these design hangovers as well?
Well, it's like the kind of, well, I guess it's an example of the kind of thing where you would say now, if you were starting from scratch, you said, hey, why don't we only have 10 surnames for a billion people? You'd be like, no, that's not really a very good design solution to that problem.
There are some designs that don't scale so well.
But when, speaking of China, the Chinese government they kind of like float this idea every now and then, and then people don't like it, so they wait for a while and then they float it again. They keep on talking about how they should get rid of Chinese characters and just switch to the romanization.
Oh shit.
Yeah.
Is that to increase industry and
I think,
trade?
Yeah,
and
I think it's just they reckon it'll be more efficient and more global, you know, like better in a global context and all that kind of stuff. But
homogenizing.
Yeah,
as well.
But it doesn't take, you know, I mean, like the language is designed to make sense like that because you have so many words that sound the same that you'd always be saying, oh, did I mean that thing? Or it's, you know, in English when you say, oh, it's really hot, and you mean like hot or spicy hot.
Yeah.
Yeah, you'd have that problem all the time in Chinese because you'd be like, do you mean Wang or Wang? Like, which Wang do you mean?
Which one?
Yeah. And so I guess that's a good example of how when you want to do one of these, you know, like get rid of these hangovers, you realize that often they have value beyond the kind of immediately functional. Like they have all this cultural stuff to do with your identity and, you know, kind of like regional identities or all that kind of stuff. Anyway, I feel like we strayed a long way from the original last question.
But the original last question was that we hope that
the design problem that I would most like to see solved is the economy, because it's a clusterfuck.
An iterative clusterfuck.
Yeah, progressively more terrible.
Do you think it will
have
to... Can
I say that on this show?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Do you think it will have to destroy itself before something new emerges?
Well, I kind of feel like the only way that, I don't know, I'm not an expert, but I feel like the only way that it would change would be in like, gradually. And I think probably that would only come about with a gradual change in people's values. So really the exercise is not in changing the economic system. It's really in changing people's values. Yeah. Or maybe not even changing their values, but reminding people of what they value. Because if you look at the economy and reverse engineered people's values, you'd say that they value being self-centered, excessive, greedy, yeah, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But that's not what anybody wants, really. Even people who are like proponents of capitalism,
yeah,
aren't inherently like that.
I feel a little bit like a lot of shit's being done in my name.
Yeah.
Because it's for the good of the people or whatever.
Like what?
Like dollar a litre milk.
Dollar a litre of milk? Oh, right. You mean, yeah, well.
And that's been done in, it's been done in the name of the good of the population who can now, or everyone can have access to milk. But also it's been done for profit, but it's still being done in my name as the populace.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting question, isn't it? Because when you look at stuff like, I don't know, like a less pressing example, because I don't know, like farmers going out of business and losing their livelihood is a bit worse than this. But when you look at airlines and people say, oh, you know, I really love that kind of way of thinking about airline travel as a special experience and valuing the kind of aesthetic qualities of that, you know, like getting a nice meal, or, you know, like whether you get served with actual cutlery or plastic cutlery or all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's obviously a first world problem, but it's an example of, it's a kind of a good example of how people are willing to trade all that in for a cheaper price. Or also another thing too, is when people say, ah, look, Qantas can't, it's not sustainable, because people would rather fly, you know, budget airlines, but then they like the idea of having an Australian airline. But then you say, well, why don't you put your money where your mouth is? And everyone's like, I don't really want to do that. It's kind of, I don't know, like, I think there are a lot of choices in life that are between corn chips and broccoli.
But corn chips are just corn and oil and salt.
Yeah, emphasis on the oil and salt. But, okay, so a choice between corn and corn chips. I don't know, but like, yeah the broccoli corn right, chips right. thing is like, you know, like sometimes you have a desire that is so tasty and cheesy yeah. that you can't see the long-term value of the delicious broccoli.
This is where I come back to with the only way that broccoli is delicious is if it hasn't been cooked the way that my Anglo heritage would have otherwise led me to it being cooked, which is boiled until it's grey.
Yeah.
And there's no way that anyone's going to choose it then.
Yeah.
And so there's a design and a system and an interaction that if it is improved, then the engagement of the thing and the choice of the thing improves as well.
Yeah, it's that decision-making thing, though. It's, you know, where they say to little kids, you can have a jelly bean now, or you can have five jelly beans later.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. I also just think that new ideas don't get picked up because they make more sense. They eventually take over because the people that were holding on to the old ideas die. And that's with good and bad ideas.
I think it depends on the idea. Some ideas get picked up really quickly.
Yeah, like closing the, like stopping with CFCs so that we didn't get a bigger...
It's funny you said that, because I actually, that was in my mind just then, was that how quickly the whole world got behind that.
Maybe it was like that Men in Black reference where it was actually an alien trying to steal our ozone layer. And they caught the alien just in time. And they had to say that everybody rallied to help.
Good work, guys.
Yeah. Yeah. But actually, it's us screwing up the rest.
Well, I don't know. Hopefully there'll be an alien that can help.
But this is what I mean about design as well, because I don't want to ask people to eat their broccoli. I want to ask them to eat their corn chips because they want to eat their corn chips. But I just want to make them in a way that it still affects them the way that broccoli does.
Well, I think that as a designer or any person who's trying to make an argument for something, it's not that you're trying to be like, don't eat corn chips. It's just because people should do what they want. But you know, I guess you can't ever make somebody do, I mean, you can, but you don't want to make somebody do something they don't want to do. But, and I think that when you're designing something, you really have to start out from really understanding what people want. And if people really do want that, you know, feeling of light healthiness, but they can't stop eating pork chips, then maybe you can help them.
Yeah. So I'm just liking it to the fact that I don't want to tell anybody that they should go cold in winter and have their heater off, or that they shouldn't be as transport agile as they would like to be. But I don't think that that needs to be powered by something that is causing the rest of the world's population harm. I think it can be powered by things that are not causing the rest of the world's population harm. So let's still give everybody complete heating in wintertime, but let's power it from something that doesn't cost us even more.
Yeah, I wouldn't even look at it like that, because the stuff you're talking about just then, when people talk about environmentalism, environmentalists usually tend to frame it in a negative way often. Well, not everybody. It kind of is perceived as that, like, you can't use your heater and you can't fly in a plane, you can't do this. But I think that's a big failure of them on selling people on the value, like, why would you do this stuff? It's not that you just have to deny yourself all the time, but if you think about it, there's lots of, like, for example, if you want to use less oil, you need to, you could frame it like, you're not allowed to drive your car, not allowed to go to Bali. But another way that you could frame it is in a more positive way, where you say stuff like, I don't know, like, if, why don't you live more in your community and get to know your neighbors, grow some veggies in your backyard, share stuff with people, you know, like, if you ride your bike more, you could frame that as, you're not allowed to drive your car. Or you could say, hey, you could, like, ride your bike every day, which is really fun.
And
you
get healthy. So if we take away the legislation of having to wear helmets in Australia, we could be saving the environment as well as saving people's lives.
Yeah.
By not getting fatter.
Yep.
I just think that it's not usually...
They should just legislate that you can't crash.
Yeah, you can drink as much as you want, you just can't get drunk.
Yeah. No, you can drink as much as you want, you just can't crash.
Okay.
As long as... if everybody drunk drove and nobody crashed, it would be fine.
Yeah. But this is what I mean about... let's just... what's the word? The distribution system is often the thing that's at fault, especially because our distribution systems are so abstracted from us. The origin.
Yeah, too complicated to understand and deliberately hidden by people.
Yeah, I don't want to ask anybody to not drive if they want to drive. But the distribution system could be improved upon the fact so that driving does not cost what it currently costs.
Or that driving is less appealing to you because something else is more appealing.
Exactly.
Yeah. I don't think that you can tell people what to do anyway. People don't take care of being told what to do.
I think you can tax people into doing what you need them to do.
Sure. I think that's part of it, but it's not the ideal solution. Like, I think definitely, like, why would you not tax people who pollute the environment, of course? Like, it's better than taxing people just arbitrarily, but... Yeah. I don't know. I feel like it's a tool, but the best tools are more carrots and less sticks.
More carrots, less sticks.
Mm.
Thanks, Chris.
It's my pleasure.